Welcome back to Robbinsdale Revisited. I'm Crystal Boyd, a member of the Robbinsdale Historical Society. In this episode, we're stepping into the glow of the marquee lights and exploring the history of movie theaters in Robbinsdale. From the town's tiny, silent movie house tucked beside a neighborhood drugstore, to one of the most celebrated mid-century theaters in America. Along the way, we'll follow the remarkable rise of the Volk brothers, immigrant entrepreneurs who built a Twin Cities theater empire that included the Robin, the Camden, the Nile, the Riverview, and ultimately the legendary Terrace Theater, a space-age palace of glass, copper, neon, and modern design. This episode is about much more than movies. It's about how theaters once served as the social heart of a community. Places where families gathered on Friday nights, kids bought candy through a doorway connected to the Rexall drugstore, and entire neighborhoods came together beneath twinkling ceilings and giant glowing signs. From silent films and Egyptian-themed movie palaces to television lounges, soundproof children's rooms, and the fierce competition between neighborhood theaters and downtown movie giants, this is the story of how cinema transformed both Robbinsdale and the Twin Cities during the 20th century. We'll also dive into the personalities behind these theaters, the ambitious Volk brothers, the visionary architects of Liebenberg and Kaplan, and even Captain Billy Fawcett, whose Hollywood connections helped bring movie stars like Tom Mix to Robbinsdale's streets. From the humble Crystal Theater of 1926 to the spectacular opening night of the Terrace in 1951, this is the story of how a small suburb became home to one of the most memorable movie theaters in Minnesota history. So join me and president of the Robbinsdale Historical Society, Pete Ritchie. We're going to the movies.
So we were going to talk about the history of movie theaters in Robbinsdale. There's only been two in Robbinsdale, but the Volk brothers actually owned five movie theaters over the course of the life of that movie theater chain, which probably ended in about 1980. They owned the Camden Theater, which was over here in North Minneapolis, and people in Robbinsdale remember it as a dollar movie theater growing up, and nice theater. And then they owned something called the Falls Theater in South Minneapolis. They tore that down and built the Riverview Theater. They owned the Robin Theater here in Robbinsdale, and we'll talk about the history of that little theater. They acquired it in the 1940s. They owned the Nile Theater, which was an amazing theater in South Minneapolis at about 38th and 24th is the intersection. And nowadays, there is a senior center there called the Nile, and it has some little Egyptian awnings at the top. But the Nile had an Egyptian theme, and an interesting theater. And then, of course, they owned the Mighty Terrace, the mid-century modern masterpiece, the finest theater in America. So we're going to start here. It's probably best remembered as the Robin Theater, but in 1926, Mueller, who owned the pharmacy here at 42nd and West Broadway, he had built a new building for his pharmacy on the corner, and he petitioned the city, and he said, I want the sidewalk to wrap around the corner, and I want to put a movie theater adjacent to the pharmacy. The city was all for it and approved that, and they built the sidewalk, and he built this little movie theater, and it had really lovely brickwork on the front. And if you're in downtown Robbinsdale, there's a Taylor really close to the corner of 42nd and West Broadway, and you will see a remnant of this building because the tiles on the little Taylor and the brickwork on the Taylor are what's left of the Mueller Pharmacy, which was a two-story building. The top story burned down in the early 60s. And then the movie theater faced 42nd, and it actually stood until 1980, but it's probably best remembered as a dry cleaner because, the movie theater closed in the early 1950s, and it became a dry cleaner after that. The town's first theater, the Robin, opened as a silent movie house in 1926. It was originally called the Crystal. It had 305 seats and was built on the backside of Mueller's Rexall Drug. The theater didn't have a snack bar, but there was a doorway from the lobby, and it led right to the candy counter at the drugstore. So you had this great business where you could you know, buy your ticket, get your snacks in the drugstore, and go back in and sit down and watch a movie. In 1931, the Crystal underwent a big remodeling and renovation, and it reopened as the Robin Theater. And then in 1938, the Robin was purchased by William and Sidney Volk's Minnehaha Theater Corporation. And this corporation that they started, they were a couple guys from Lithuania. It went to all sorts of different names. On some of the stationery from the Terrace Theater, they called themselves the Robin Steel Entertainment Company. And at that time, they owned the Robin Theater in Robbinsdale. They owned the bowling alley in Robbinsdale, and they owned the Terrace. And they had plans for a shopping mall adjacent to the Terrace Theater, which didn't really get built till the 80s and long after they were gone. But, you know, it was always their dream that there would be some shopping there.
So the Robin Theater opens as a silent movie house. That's kind of interesting. Movies without sound in the 20s. And 305 seats seems kind of like a lot for the 1920s.
Everybody described the few people that have this theater in their living memory describe it as tiny. But, you know, 305 seats, I'm trying to think of what a 305-seat theater is now. But
I mean, I don't know how big Robbinsdale was in the 1920s. That would be like
4,000 or 5,000 people.
Yeah, like you get everybody from the high school, everybody from the library club.
Probably drove in from the surrounding community. Also, you're on a streetcar line, so maybe people from North Minneapolis came out here. They had the not too far down the road over on the north side on West Broadway, you had the Capri Theater, which originally opened maybe as the Paradise Theater, 2-3 miles from downtown Robbinsdale. But speaking of silent movies, we should also mention that Captain Billy, at that time he had Whizbang magazine. 1922, he brings out True Confessions. Through the rest of the 1920s, he got involved in movie magazines. Now, on the cover of Whizbang, you might have somebody like Louise Brooks or Joan Crawford. So he had some movie stars, you know, on the cover, and he would write a column or two in Whizbang about movie stars. But he really started making money with these magazines that were like Screen, Star and Screen, that kind of thing. Hollywood loved him, and the movie stars loved him because he was their publicity go-to, and he was in that business early enough. His distribution was wide enough that they didn't mind cozying up to him and going out to his resort at Breezy Point. And he brought Tom Mix to Robbinsdale. We have these wonderful pictures of Tom Mix in this crazy cowboy outfit. I mean, the tailoring on it is just incredible. Giant 10-gallon white hat, and he's standing there on the main drag in front of the Robbinsdale Village Hall with our police chief, John Bloberger, and Captain Billy on either side of him. And I imagine that they had a Tom Mix movie for everybody to come and see. And I'm sure Captain Billy came over here and took a look at the theater. He mentions the theater a couple times in the old Whizbang magazines. So let's talk a little bit about the Volk brothers. So you got Sidney, William, and Julius Volk. And they come to Minneapolis by way of Lithuania at the dawn of the jazz age. When the Depression hit, they took out loans. They, you know, pooled all their savings, and they went into the movie theater business. During the 1930s, old silent movie houses were being retrofitted for sound, and new theaters were opening all over the Twin Cities. And the Volk's business model sort of relied on acquiring popular neighborhood venues. So in 1938, their Minnehaha theater chain consisted of 5 movie houses. This was kind of the peak of their chain. On the north side of Minneapolis, they had the Camden. They had the Robin here in Robbinsdale. On the south side, they had the Nile Theater and the Falls Theater. And over in St. Paul, the brothers were operating this thing called the New Ray Theater. After a fire at the Camden in 1934, the Volks hired the design firm of Liebenberg and Kaplan, and they were kind of the premier architects. Founded in 1923, Jacob L. Lieberman and Seaman L. Kaplan. Their design firm was responsible for at least 200 theaters, their construction and renovation projects in the upper Midwest. Liebenberg and Kaplan's first theater was the Atmospheric Granada, and it was called the Suburban World when I was a kid. It had this beautiful lobby, and then you drop down into the movie theater, And when you looked up, there were stars, and they would twinkle because they were embedded into the ceiling. And it was still that way with sort of, you know, it had sort of a Roman garden feeling with the cedar trees up along the edge, and they would light up the edge of the theater so it looked like it was dusk. And then the stars would come out, and the movie would begin. Beautiful theater, and I believe it's a restaurant now. And if they didn't keep the ceiling, I haven't been in it since they turned it into a restaurant, they're nuts. The Granada opens in 1928 in the auditorium. You know, it was evoking, I say, a Roman courtyard, but maybe a Spanish courtyard. And when the lights went down, the stars twinkled in the ceiling. And they also projected clouds and an artificial moon. And so the clouds roll by on the ceiling, and there's a little moon up there. And they used stadium seating to replace the typical balcony arrangement. So the movie theater is kind of at a tilt. And the Granada was the first movie house in the Twin Cities designed for talking pictures. The building put Liebenberg and Kaplan on the map. And every theater in the country was sort of retooling for sound. After a $30,000 remodel, the Volks Camden Theater opened its doors to the public on Friday, February 1st, 1935. The auditorium had a brand new screen, and they had modern cooling, which I think meant they were blowing cold air up from the basement. I'm not sure you really had air conditioning yet. The walls depicted various neighborhood activities, and I have been looking for pictures of that for a long time. So this is Camden. Neighborhood activities are some lumber operations up there. And an extended lobby was complemented by a small lounge and a powder puff room, because every theater needed a powder puff room at that time. The Volks kind of prided themselves on something fancy in all of their theaters. So the following year, the Volks raised the old Nile Theater, and they spent $100,000 erecting a new 1,000-seat theater on the same site. And the designer here was Perry E. Crawler, who I also believe there's a theater called the Heart of the Beast in South Minneapolis, a puppet theater. It used to be called the Avalon, and that architect designed that one too. So he fronted the Nile with sort of pink Cato stone, and then they had some Cold Spring black marble. It had sort of an elaborate Egyptian motif that employed both exterior construction and interior decorations. The auditorium contained 8 enormous wall panels depicting scenes taken from actual Egyptian temples and tombs. And the building was topped by an obelisk-shaped sort of neon-illuminated pillar. Beyond the Nile's black granite box office, the lobby was done in black and white vitrolite. A lounge ran the length of the basement and contained a variety of Egyptian-style furnishings. The Nile was the first Volk venue to feature soundproof rooms where children could watch the show without disturbing others. That was a big feature at the Terrace. They eventually put those into the Camden and some of their other theaters that we'll get to. So they were built into the wall next to the projection room. The children's section could accommodate about 25. The sound was provided through a loudspeaker system with a clear view of the screen, and that was afforded by a 12-foot window. So you got this window at the back of the auditorium, and it was also rented out for parties. So even up into the 70s, if you wanted to bring 10 guys over to the Nile and watch the movie and get rowdy up there, you wouldn't disturb anybody else, and you could rent out that little room. So the Volks continued to expand their business, and by the end of the Depression, they were running one of the largest theater chains in the Twin Cities. The next step was to build a couple new venues, but Sidney and William's portfolio stagnated after America was dragged into World War II. Sidney went off to serve in the Army, where he attained the rank of captain. William stayed behind and ran the business. Between 1942 and 1944, President Roosevelt's War Production Board prohibited non-essential construction. Theater exhibitors nationwide shelved their plans, and after the building loans were lifted, the Volk brothers announced their intention to build a $125,000 theater in Robbinsdale. And the new venue would have at least 1,000 seats and build upon the success of the Robin Theater. The announcement was, you know, met with some grumbling. It had been 12 years since a movie house had been opened in the Twin Cities. That suited all the old theater owners downtown. These giant theaters like the Minnesota Theater were downtown, and they had 4,000 seats. And the idea that there were going to be some new theaters just didn't sit right with them. They did all sorts of things to protect their downtown theaters. So the editors of a trade magazine, Greater Amusements, accused the Volks of initiating a theater-building orgy right here in the Twin Cities.
That seems excessive if they haven't had a new theater in 12 years.
But they've got plans to build a whole bunch of them. So a year later, the Volks added fuel to the fire when they announced their intention to build a new movie house to replace the aging Falls Theater on Maha Avenue in South Minneapolis. A group of established exhibitors told the city council that a permit should be denied on the grounds that construction would lead to a glut of new movie houses. The argument failed to persuade, and the Volks got their license.
Well, it sounds like capitalism at its best, though, right? You can't just deny people a permit because you don't want the competition.
Oh, but not only did they deny them permits, as we will see, the movie theater business and the cinema business, sometimes they would say, you can't have first-run films because you're not downtown. We don't want first-run films in the neighborhoods. And that was infuriating for these guys. The brothers worked with Liebenberg and Kaplan to create a streamlined, modern design for the new Falls Theater. And after about 2 years of planning, a $250,000 80 by 120-foot building rose at the corner of 38th Street and 42nd Avenue South. The new movie house contained a large auditorium with a 25-foot ceiling and 700 stadium seats. The Volks decided on a name change to avoid the association with the dingy old Minnehaha Avenue Theater, and they opened their new showcase as the Riverview Theater on December 29th, 1948, and it was billed as the Theater of Tomorrow Today. What a great Jetsons kind of slogan that certainly went with the decor. The Riverview made the cover of Box Office Magazine, and it was featured in a variety of national publications. The theater's first movie was June Bride, starring Betty Davis and Robert Montgomery. If you've ever been to the movie theater, the Riverview down there in South Minneapolis, it does not look different than when it opened. I mean, the lobby is so perfectly preserved, right down to the couches that you see in these old pictures, the chairs. They got rid of the ashtrays at some point. They kept the phone booth. The Volks did give it a small remodel in about the early 50s, right after they opened the terrace. And right by the restrooms, there is kind of a kidney-shaped wooden structure. And in it is a spot for a television. And there's still a television there. The Volks put that there because they were adamant to let people know that the movie theater business had nothing to fear from television. The Riverview was the first place to have this kind of television lounge in the movie theater. So if you wanted to slip out in the middle of the movie and check the score on the game, or, you know, needed to hear Walter Cronkite, you could leave the movie and go see that. So the following year, the Volks were ready to move forward with their Robbinsdale project. The little suburb of Robbinsdale was growing by leaps and bounds. Thousands of new homes were being built on the western edge of the city. In the coming years, the Robbinsdale School District would add 18 elementary schools to accommodate the post-war baby boom. Sidney and William wanted to make a splash. They called on Liebenberg and Kaplan again for another theater design, and the firm delivered, and the brothers approved an unprecedented modern concept to be built on a grand scale. The Volks purchased a sprawling 10-acre site overlooking Crystal Lake. An early Liebenberg and Kaplan schematic for the lot featured a shopping center, office buildings, landscape parking lot for over 1,000 cars, a playground, and a pool. Minnesota architecture critic Larry Millett noted, Liebenberg produced an exciting design for a theater that would be his mid-century masterpiece, the Magnificent Terrace. Boy, you know, Millett enjoys a good slogan, too.
That is magnificent. I can't imagine going to the movie theater and the pool. I had the playground all in one day.
Right, and we'll talk a little bit more about the terrace, but another plan included a bowling alley in the basement. So they were thinking big. They weren't afraid of anything. When you look at some of the early plans, there was always a tower. The terrace was always going to have a tower. But in the early plans, there was also going to be quite the elaborate parking lot, and you were going to have a shopping mall that was going to wrap around the parking lot, and an office building that was going to be elevated so you could park cars underneath it, which keeps them out of the sun. It'd be great.
It's almost like a theme park. Almost like an early Disney theme park. All these different activities, things to do.
So while the eventual site development lacked some of the more elaborate elements of the Liebenberg and Kaplan schematic plan, most of the terrace's imaginative design reached construction. The theater was situated on the rear of the site on a rise overlooking the surrounding portion of the lake, swamp, and countryside. The terrace was set back into a shopping center plot by several hundred feet to allow space for a shopping mall. The setback also allowed enough space for even more parking. So the theater marked a break for Liebenberg and Kaplan. The earlier indoor theater designs were primarily Art Deco or this streamlined modern design, but the terrace was mid-century modern, and it rose from the lot as reinforced concrete and steel frame building faced a blonde brick and stone veneer. So Crystal Lake, this wetland, was the south end of Crystal Lake. At that point, they'd already built a little highway between the lake and where the movie theater is, but there was still a lot of wetland there. Below the terrace theater was this giant swamp. The northeast side of the building featured bold geometric forms and a row of dramatically tilted plate glass windows, 80 feet long and 20 feet high. And Catherine Lee Scott, when she was describing the terrace to me one time, she says, these space-age windows, space-age plate glass windows. So again, we've got a Jetsons thing going on. The Jetsons will have been quite at home going to the terrace theater. A red brick tower set off by backlit glass, crowned with mirrored signs, anchored the northeast corner of the building and proclaimed the terrace to all of Robbinsdale. And when I say proclaim, I mean that tower was, you know, 3-4 stories tall, and those letters were about 4 feet high each, but they lit up with hundreds of light bulbs in each one, and they flickered, and you could see it from a long way around, especially from the east side, because the terrace was kind of up on this hill. It was a striking building, and at Whiz Bang Days, we always would have fireworks over Crystal Lake, and so you'd go sit in the terrace parking lot to see the fireworks there, and the terrace sign was always lit up too, and it was it didn't really compete with fireworks, but almost. It kind of felt like it did. So the Volk brothers spared no expense on the construction of their flagship theater. The cost estimates for the building ran between $700,000 and $1 million. The terrace's improbable foyer was an ambitious space, slipped under a ceiling, stepped to follow the stadium line of the auditorium.
Pete, now what year is this?
So this is 1951.
1951, okay.
I've heard a story a couple times that there's this guy and he's wandering around on a sunny, boring day in the early 70s. And Sidney Volk is sitting out in front of the terrace having a cigar. And the guy is kind of standing there staring at the building. And Volk looks at him and says, "I own this place. This place cost $1 million." But I like that story. I think the Volk brothers were very proud of this theater, and they should have been. The day the theater opens, they get telegrams from Hollywood. The one I remember was Ricardo Montalban sends them a telegram congratulating them. They get telegrams from big business people in Minneapolis. The Daytons send telegrams. They bring Cedric Adams, who was a columnist out here, and he raves about the place and helps them during the opening night ceremonies. The mayor comes out. Everybody comes out for this event. So inside, it's warm. There's elegant brick, stone, wood, and copper that are used throughout the interior. Sort of mid-century modern residential trends, more than the sterility of the international style or the free-form drama of the atomic age commercial buildings. To the right of the entrance, there's niches that are carved out from the main lobby for a candy counter and a snack bar. There's fine fixtures and finishes that included walnut-clad popcorn machine, a two-level copper wishing well drinking fountain, Turkish loomed carpeting added to the high level of refinement. There were rugs from the company headquartered in Manhattan that could also be found in Radio City Music Hall and the United States Supreme Court building.
So just to compare for a second, this is maybe less than 30 years after that original Crystal Theater. Remember when people had to like go over to the drugstore to get their candy and bring it back to the silent movie?
Yeah.
What a change.
And the scale of the lobby was something that always blew people away, because not only was it just this giant space, but it had this sunken den. So immediately off the foyer, moviegoers found an inviting sunken lounge designed as an enlarged and impeccably decorated mid-century den. The lounge was rimmed off by a low stone wall that enclosed a long tier of cushioned seats, and there was a copper-hooded fireplace that was nestled between, you know, enormous slanted windows and an array of plant boxes. The terrace had all sorts of places for plants, and when you go to the Riverview Theater, you'll see this too. In front of the windows are places for plants. So there was a served by a candy counter in the foyer, and a combination of cut stone, California redwood, and blonde oak gave the sunken lounge an informal, kind of outdoorsy atmosphere. I think it was really a place to smoke, because whenever you see pictures of it, there's just these little ashtrays that stand on little pedestals, and they are about every 4 feet. There's one of these things in front of these benches. So plenty of room to stretch out and have a cig and wait for the movie to start. Opposite the foyer, the terrace television room gave a nod to the new in a period when movie theaters across the country were either closing or competing with televisions. The Volk brothers decided that they could use the novelty of the television to extend to the moviegoer, you know, another experience. Rumor had it that a national circuit of movie theaters would soon offer top sporting events and Broadway plays on an exclusive pay-to-see basis, which I'm not sure ever really materialized. Every once in a while, a movie theater will have a sporting event. But, you know, the Volk brothers were just putting a television out there, and they put it on Channel 5, and you guys could go see what was on. So inside the auditorium, there's a semicircular stage that was approached by carpeted steps, broken by square stone planters. Again, we got these places for plants. And when you look at old pictures of the terrace, there are always flowering plants in every one of their little planters.
Are those real plants? Like, how would they grow without any sunlight?
Good question. But I think they were real plants. The Volks, again, they wanted to, you know, up this experience to make it. And certainly out in the lobby, I call them mother-in-law's tongues. You know, there's a whole bunch of plants out in the lobby that we know were living plants. I think they brought in floral arrangements. And in some of these early pictures of the terrace on opening night, you'll see the flower arrangements in the TV room. And it makes it look a little bit like there's a funeral going on or maybe a wedding, because there's just flowers everywhere. So the restrooms at the terrace were, you know, gorgeously appointed with marble counters and inset lighting and a built-in planter, of course. A large ladies' powder room was painted in tones of gray and rust, and the men's restroom featured a redwood smoking lounge, just in case you didn't want to have a smoke in the lobby, you want to have a private smoke where nobody would see you. At a time when air conditioning was still largely unaffordable, the terrace's cooling system, supplied by United States Air Conditioning Equipment and 52 degrees well water, became an area attraction.
That's so interesting. Yeah. How did they know it was 52 degrees?
Well, you know, they had thermometers.
Yes, but like, have you ever been to a movie theater and been like, that's some good 52 degree water?
Well, I also wonder, Robbinsdale was often known for not having great water. So if they got well water, did they have their own well?
They must have. Well, they were going to, you know, fill up that whole pool. So
yeah. There was an enormous, largely unfinished basement. This contained three garage stalls, and there was a system of dumb waiters that served candy counters. You could bring up soda and candy from storage rooms. And the upper floor contained two private offices for the Volk brothers. I mean, it's not like they're going to share an office. This is a story that always kind of gets my attention, because there's a few people that still remember this happening. And the way that it was described in the papers, it seems like such an enormous event. But it was something that could be seen for miles and miles. And it was not the terrace marquee. So the terrace almost didn't make it to grand opening day, because on May 12th, 1951, 10,000 gallons of fuel oil seeped out of the basement, and an engineer decided it was unusable, and so he pumped what was left into a nearby swamp. You know, down there below the parking lot, there were the swamps. So a couple of small boys are out there playing with matches, just like I used to do. What do you want to do? Let's go down to the swamp and light some matches. So they're out there playing with matches, and the inevitable happens. The flames rose so high that North Minneapolis residents all thought that Robbinsdale was going up in smoke. Traffic on West Broadway, Old Highway 52, which was a busier road then, was backed up for miles, but there were no damages or injuries reported, and the Terrace Theater opened for business on May 23, 1951, with a showing of Spencer Tracy and Elizabeth Taylor's Father's Little Dividend. Great story, though. I wonder who those kids were. Are they still with us? Could we ask them? Did they get caught? I mean, they say it was two small boys playing with matches. We don't know their names.
That's a pretty specific setup. Somebody knew something.
Nobody was hurt. The theater wasn't damaged. And then just the amount of fuel oil. I don't know what a 10,000-gallon tank looks like. When they tore down the terrace and they're building the Hy-Vee, it took them almost an extra year. And some of it was cleanup. And I can't help but wonder, was the ground still contaminated, you know, 65 years later with all the fuel oil? Because most of it, I think, just went into the ground or was, you know, and then he's like, well, what should I do with, we can't use this. I'll just pump it into this swamp.
This mud pit is saturated. Let me put it in the swamp.
And the smell. Can you imagine the smell?
Thanks for listening. I'm Crystal Boyd. Robbinsdale Revisited is brought to you by the Robbinsdale Historical Society. Our little history museum is located at 4915 42nd Avenue North in the heart of Robbinsdale. We're open Fridays and Saturdays from 10 to 3. You can also visit us online at robbinsdale.org. You found this episode, so you know where to find the next one.
Bicycle into the city every Saturday to see our friends. In the bus back home, sitting hand in hand. When the evening ends, when the evening ends, when the evening ends, in Robbinsdale.
Music is provided by Gabe Barnett and Them Rounders.
The end.